This is the FitCast. Hello and welcome to episode number 4 of the FitCast for May 7th, 2006. My name's Kevin Larrabee, and I'm joined this week, as always, by Dr. John K. Williams. How you doing today, John?
Hi, Kevin. Doing good. How are you doing this week?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm back from college for good.
Good, good. Did you kick your sore throat from last week?
Yeah, I kicked that. I got a little bit of, I don't know if it's an allergies, just something I guess everyone gets in the beginning of summer, just a little bit of a stuffy nose. But actually, the sore throat was gone in 24 hours.
After you zapped it with the green tea?
Exactly. That's why everyone should pound the green tea. Not too much, but should definitely be drinking it when they're sick. It does wonders for me.
Absolutely. Hey, I've been meaning to ask you, what is your last name? What sort of nationality or what sort of ethnicity is that?
Larrabee? I don't know. I know I have a background of, I think it might be French.
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure. I haven't gone too deep into my background as far as nationality, but...
Well, it's a cool name anyway.
Yeah, that's what my friends usually end up calling me. It's a little bit more of a catchphrase than Kevin, so...
Yeah, Larrabee.
Yeah, that's what they call me on the basketball team in high school, and I guess they still do it today. But anyways, on this week's episode of the FitCast, I'm going to talk to you guys a little bit about the future one-on-ones that we're going to be having. We're not going to have one this week, but I'll talk a little bit of what's coming up in the future. Also, we're going to have our Shakes of the Week from John and I. Also, as always, the news and our roundtable. I'm actually going to announce the giveaway this week, which I forgot to get to last week, but I promised to talk about this week. And also, don't forget that the Craig Ballantyne interview is actually available online through iTunes in its entirety, and also on the fitcast.com. So check it out if you haven't already. But anyways, first off, for the future one-on-ones, if you guys have anyone that you want me to get on the show, let me know. Just drop me an email, talk to me online, just go to the fitcast.com. You can leave messages there, just let me know. I have been talking to a couple guys that are interested in coming on the show, and there's some pretty good guys that I really think you guys will enjoy, along with how the Craig Ballantyne interview went, which so far everyone's been downloading a lot of, almost as much as episode 3 of the show. So don't forget about that. Now let's get to our shakes of the week. John, what do you have for a shake this week?
I'm drinking a Cytosport Cytogainer. It's a... post-workout shake. Basically, it is some mixture of whey proteins and maltodextrin is the carbohydrate that they put in there to make it sort of a post-workout. And it's, you know, it's okay. Last week I reviewed Cytosport Muscle Milk, and I was really impressed with the Muscle Milk flavoring. It's a little high in fat. It's obviously not a post-workout shake, but I really liked it. I think I gave it, 8 out of 10. This Cytogainer, it's middle of the road for me. It tastes okay. It's better tasting than some of the gainer shakes that I've had in the past. I'm drinking chocolate malt. I know they have some other flavors. I think chocolate mint is one of the options. It's not the best taste, not the worst. As far as what it's made up of, I personally prefer something with not just maltodextrin, maybe some maltodextrin and glucose or a couple of different types of carbohydrates. I've had Surge in the past, and I personally think Surge tastes better and it is, a hell of a lot better option. Again, the taste factor is purely subjective. A lot of people think Surge is awful. What I've found with Surge, and I'm sure I'll give a review of that down the road sometime, but Surge, it gets better the more times you drink it. You start craving it after a month or so. But overall, Cytogainer, I think 6 out of 10 is what I'll give it.
Yeah, along with the Surge. Surge is good stuff. I got a couple tubs of that in the past, and it really does taste like, I don't know how to explain it, but almost like birthday cake.
Yeah,
if
yeah,
that makes
like
sense.
Angel food cake to
yeah,
me.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, by the way, I'm using my omnidirectional mic. I'm really old school here with this podcast. I've got my headphones and this Bob Barker looking microphone. So I apologize. If you can hear me swallowing the shake because it picks up pretty much everything in the room. So I'll try to be discreet.
Yeah, as long as you're not screaming out, come on down, or anything like that. Nothing too distracting. A little bit of taking a sip of the protein shake. I mean, at least it shows that we're actually drinking the shakes. We're not just talking about them. It's kind of making,
that's right.
I guess we could say we're making an homage to the show Dignation.
That's right.
Which, in that case, they're actually talking about tech news stories from dig.com, and they're drinking a different kind of beer every week, which if you listen to a couple of shows back, we talked about actually drinking beer instead of a protein shake, and that's where we got that idea. And I know, John, you actually brought up the whole idea of the protein shakes because of Dig, and it was kind of funny because both of us actually listened to Dig Nation, and
yeah.
It's a great show.
Yeah, it's a good one. And, you know, we just love irony, and that's why we'd love to drink beer in a fitness nutrition podcast. But you'll just have to take our word for the fact that we are actually drinking shakes until we get the video podcast up and running next year.
Yeah, we'll see. Hey, the future holds anything.
That's right.
So maybe we'll hook up some webcams. We can figure out how to take the next step into that. But, again, that's down the road. We're still on episode 4 right now, so... We'll see what happens. And actually, for this week, I did Optimum Nutrition 100% Whey Fruit Punch flavor. And I know Keith talked about Optimum Nutrition, and you talked to him. Talked about their shakes before. And actually, the fruit punch flavor is pretty new, and I happen to love it. I can mix it in water, and it kind of tastes like really bad Gatorade. And for my post workout and sometimes during workout shake, I can just mix it with Fruit Punch Gatorade powder, and it tastes just as good as regular Gatorade. It's really one of those protein powders. If you're going to be doing a mix of Gatorade powder for your carbohydrates and the whey for your protein, I'd definitely take a look at Optimum Nutrition's 100% Fruit Punch Whey and just go to Shaw's or Stop and Shop or even BJ's and pick up a tub of Gatorade powder and just mix it together, get your ratios right. And you're good to go. It tastes very good, and you're not having to choke it down like anything. Unless, of course, you're drinking Surge, which, again, I happen to love that stuff, and it's something that if I could afford, I'd be getting all the time. It's a little
yeah, it's
bit more
stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is very expensive. It's not very expensive. They dropped it down to $23 a tub at BioTest, so you know it's still one of the pricier ones, but for what you get, I think it's worth it. But I'm glad to hear that Optimum is coming around and messing around with their flavorings because they did used to be awful. I remember some of the early versions of chocolate and vanilla. Ugh, was awful. And I'm glad to hear that you can mix something with Gatorade flavorings. I'm glad that there's a fruit punch flavored protein because before I tried the whole Gatorade thing and, you know, I didn't have any protein that was remotely compatible with Gatorade except for vanilla. And ugh, it was awful, you know, vanilla and whatever, and, you know, lime or fruit punch, it's just not good. So, yeah, this sounds pretty awesome. I think I'll have to give that a try.
Optimum stuff is pretty cheap. I think it's like $22 for a 5-pound tub on bodybuilding.com or pretty much anywhere. It's from $22 to $25 for a 5-pound tub, and it's nice to see some cheap whey for actually some good-tasting results, and it's about time.
And this week's episode of FitCast is brought to you by Optimum Nutrition.
I'm sorry.
Actually, you don't have to worry about us being biased in any way because we're not sponsored by any of these people we're reviewing. So
yeah.
It's completely unbiased.
I guess you could say we're sponsored in a way by JP Fitness.
Yes,
just because we're always on the boards and it's a great fitness forum for everyone to check out. I mean, we can't talk about it enough every week on the show, how much really information you can get just by going to the forums and asking questions and reading posts.
Yeah, we're like a little community there with a bunch of regulars that go there. It's a great community. You don't get any of the trolls that you find at the other sites, or if they are, then they're booted off pretty quick, and you get, you know, fitness professionals on there as well. Lou Schuler is a regular member. It's great to drop in and chat with him on a regular basis. Several others drop in occasionally. Adam Campbell has been known to make an appearance. Lots of others, too. I think Alan has been on there before.
Mm-hmm.
Tons of people.
Yeah, I don't know if I mentioned it last week, but also Craig joined the boards as well.
Nice.
So it's definitely somewhere. If you have questions about certain books like Scrawny to Brawny, any of the books where I know Lou's done a couple of the books also, New Rules of Lifting by Alan, you can just go there and ask questions, and sometimes they'll actually answer them for you, which is really cool. But I digress. We should probably head on to this week's news.
All right, so we're going to alternate stories today. And one of the stories that caught my eye this week in the news was actually an article written in a journal. And it's concerning fruit and vegetable consumption and the risk of stroke. It was published in the journal Neurology, and it basically wanted to test the effects of fruit and vegetable intake on the risk of stroke. Everybody knows from past studies that fruit and vegetables are healthy in terms of cardiovascular fitness, in terms of heart healthy, in terms of all kinds of stuff, cancer prevention, but directly related to a stroke, this one tested. So the results were really impressive. Each serving of fruit slashes your risk of a brain-crippling stroke by 11%. That's fruit. Veggies help also. They cut stroke risk by another 3%. But what was really interesting about this is that each serving, so basically one serving's good, two is better, three is better than that, each serving decreasing your stroke risk by 11%. So, you know, that's a really good reason just to go out and go crazy with fruits and vegetables, and this is a good season of the year to do so. Farmers markets are opening, you know, around the nation this time of year. And, you know, it's something we should all strive to do, you know, get not just for these other reasons, but, you know, stroke. I mean, what better reason to eat your vegetables than to, you know, enjoy knowing that you have an 11% last chance of getting a stroke.
Absolutely.
And, you know, the article didn't go into great details about why, but, you know, there's several factors. A lot of studies suggest that the potassium may be part of the answer in vegetables and fruits. Because it helps keep the blood pressure down, and, you know, a lot of fruit particularly is full of it, veggies as well. High potassium foods, obviously, everybody knows bananas are high in potassium. Also apricots, melons, things like oranges, strawberries, sweet potatoes are also pretty good. Spinach is really good, dark veggies like that, tomatoes, avocados are rich in everything, so... There's just a few, and I think later in our roundtable we'll be discussing how to go about raising your fruit and vegetable intake in practical terms that people can do every day.
It's just nice. It's just one more reason. I mean, I don't know how many times people can be told, but you should be getting your servings of fruits and vegetables every day. Practically vegetables at every meal possible. It's really not too hard to throw in some vegetables everywhere, unless you're on the run, of course. But like John said, we're going to be talking about that in the roundtable. Again, it's a great article, and it just drives it into your head. I mean, just have an apple with that salad. I mean, it's so easy to just get some servings, and there's so many benefits to your body from having fruits and vegetables. This is just one more example, and you read it all over the place, so... Get your fruits and vegetables. Listen to what your mother said when you were a kid, pretty much.
She was right. All right, well, moving on. Should we go into one of your articles, Kevin?
Yeah, this article is actually from T Nation. It was called the Bigger Arms Challenge. I know some people have actually been talking about this on the JP Fitness boards, and it's something I wanted to talk about. It was a really interesting article that was on T Nation, and it's really just two workouts a week for 2 weeks. It's really not too complicated. The obvious goal is to see visual increase in your bicep size in just 2 weeks. And that's, again, just four workouts over 2 weeks using high-intensity training. You're going to train to momentary muscular failure to the point where you physically cannot do another rep. And in the article, they talked about expecting extreme muscle soreness, which is kind of obvious if you're going to be exercising to such an extreme failure. And also, after reading it, it seems like this could get the job done, but the results are only going to be temporary. This might be something that you could try if you're going to Florida in 2 weeks, you're going to the beach, you wanted to get those arms just as big as possible, but keep in mind the results don't look like they're going to be permanent. And it's just a study, it's just kind of a challenge that they're trying out, and they're looking to see what people's results are. So if this is something you want to give a shot, head over to T-Nation, check out the article, which I'll have a link for on thefitcast.com, like all the other articles. And look at what people have been saying. People have already started the workouts. And, why not? It's only 4 workouts for 2 weeks. You could probably fit it into your normal workout, probably subtracting 1 day and adding in those two days if you're doing something like a 3-day-a-week lifting program. And I mean, what the hell? I don't think I'm going to try it right now, but it was a good read. It had a lot of nice facts in it, and it goes into some of the physiology of it. So give it a look. What did you think, John?
Yeah, and the actual challenge begins tomorrow, May 8th, yeah. if you want to get on that challenge. You know, my knee-jerk reaction to any guns specialization article is disgust at first. So I was really skeptical reading it. But, you know, they're all good. Not all good, but this is a good article. People are going to do it. It sounds interesting. I'm going to try it. I don't know if it'll suck tomorrow or not, but you know, it's something that every guy wants, bigger arms, you know, let's face it. And they're going to do it. You see a lot of complaints on the forums. Oh, it's another arm specialization program. But then they decide to try it a little later. So it was well written. It's a good idea to make it into a challenge. The last big T-Nation arms article I remember was Ian King's Great Guns, and people are still doing that. You know, I don't know when it came out. It seems like it was, 4 years ago, I think, when it first came out, and people are still talking about that. So once in a while, one will come through, and I think it's about time for another one to take the place of Great Guns. And like you said, why not? It's 2 weeks for workouts. Mm-hmm. They do seem really intense. This is Ellington Darden, this high-intensity guy. So at least it might be a little introduction into his world, even though it's, not everyone agrees with his methods. At least it looks pretty solid on paper. So, we'd like to hear back from anybody who tries it, see if it actually does add huge amounts of muscle.
Yeah, John, just echoing what you were saying, when I was reading some of the replies on T-Nation, everyone was kind of saying what you're saying a couple weeks ago. Oh, that's just what I was looking for. It's just what I needed. And yeah, exactly. I was just like, oh, no, not again. But, I mean, the article was pretty interesting. And who knows, maybe if I check out the article again a month or 2 months down the road and people are saying, holy crap, it really worked. And maybe the results weren't permanent, or maybe they were able to sustain it over a long period of time. But I mean, who knows? We don't obviously know now, but we'll see in 2 weeks what people are talking about.
But the bottom line, folks, is that you can't shoot a cannon from a canoe, as mm-hmm. Arnold used to say. And you can do a 2 weeks arm specialization program, but you got to work on those legs, to get your body to grow. Squats and deadlifts is where it's at.
Absolutely.
Okay, the second article is non-diet sodas to be pulled from schools. I'll just spend a brief amount of time on this because we've been basically covering this story on each episode of the FitCast, and basically relating it to public schools. This article is showing how a new bill out by President Bill Clinton, former President Bill Clinton, and his foundation they're trying to target childhood obesity, and they're trying to pull non-diet sodas from the schools, and apparently it's working. Basically, the bill calls for schools to sell only water, unsweetened juice, and low-fat and non-fat milk, as well as some flavored and unflavored milks in elementary and middle schools. It also says that diet sodas and sports drinks will only be sold in high schools. So, you know, it's just a brief article, nothing profound about it. Again, it's one of these things where it can't hurt. I'm not a big fan of regulating everything out there, but some regulations are necessary, particularly when it comes to schools and these massive companies that are making money off of fattening up our kids, selling sugary high fructose corn syrup foods in the schools. Just not such a good idea. What do you think of this, Kevin?
Well, I just think it's nice that steps are being made. I mean, through the FitCast's continuing coverage of the childhood obesity epidemic every week.
That's right.
But I think it's really something that we have to touch on every week. And news stories are coming out almost every other day about something that some schools are doing to bring in healthier food or taking out the junk food. And I think it's great. I mean, every step that they can take to bring our kids one step closer to eating more wholesome foods, sticking to milk, low-fat milk and water, and just juices. I mean, it's every step's great. And they got to just make sure they're hitting on all the points. It's not just soda. Of course, it's the things in the vending machines. It's the candy. It's what they're serving for lunch. Some kids are going to the lunch line and just getting French fries. It's really nice to see this, and I hope we see more stores like this. We're not going to be talking about them every week, but I think it's more steps are being taken, and it's great to see it. There's no problem with it whatsoever. I mean, like John said, more regulations, not the greatest thing, but for some kids that are in grades kindergarten to fifth grade, if they don't know that soda's going to make them out of shape and make them not as good at sports, maybe if they just don't know that, they're just going to drink it because it tastes good. I mean, that's what, when I was a kid, I just drank it. It tastes great. So I'm going to drink it. I don't want to drink water. I want to drink a Coke or I want to drink orange soda.
Yeah. And we sort of keep coming back to this, but you know, Kevin and I are from somewhat different generations and a few years older than him. And, you know, there's some truth in the saying that, you know, out of sight, out of mind. When I was in school, I didn't have access to sugary sodas. You know, I didn't miss them in school. Of course, I got them when I went home occasionally. But, when you make it really easy for kids to splurge on candy or sugary stuff, they're going to do so.
Yeah, I think that pretty much wraps it up for that story. But story number four this week is actually about a topic that gets discussed quite often in the fitness world, and that is, do you really burn more fat by exercising on an empty stomach? And the New York Times actually had a little bit of a story on this, kind of a blurb, about a couple studies that were done on this subject. And one of the studies in the article was from 1995, and it found that people did burn more calories from fat on days when they exercised on an empty stomach. Of course, we're talking about cardiovascular activity, not weightlifting. And also, the second article counteracted that when in 1999, they found that people who had a small breakfast were able to exercise longer and in turn burn more calories, obviously. And it just brings up the topic that it's a long fought out debate, and people sometimes take both sides. I know people that in college still go to the gym and exercise on an empty stomach. They'll maybe have a couple of cups of water, but they're just going to go to the gym. And when you do that, you can see stronger cravings later in the day when you're working on an empty stomach because your stomach's just burning. And me personally, I just do something not to that extreme, but at least have something like a whey shake with some fish oil caps. I know, again, in magazines, you read so many different ideas on this subject. Some say you should have at least some carbohydrates so you're not just going right to your protein storage. But I mean, I don't know if there's a perfect answer for this, but it's going to be something that's going to be debated and people are going to take sides on until we get some definite results.
Yeah, you know, Alan had a funny little sort of new rules type of article on T Nation one time, and he was just like, "Who gives a crap about the fasted cardio debate? It doesn't make any difference, you know, if you go to the gym, you know, without drinking a protein shake before or after. Just you got to get the calories in sometime. And, you know, basically that's true. He ordered it much better than my memory recalls. But, you know, there's good and bad arguments on both sides. I'm generally of the opinion that you should definitely eat something before you go in for a workout, especially a intense workout of any kind involving weights or even intense cardio. There have been some good arguments made by other folks where they say that depending on your goals, that's a caveat here, mm-hmm. you can do fasted state cardio with some results, you know, in burning more fat. But generally, you know, if you look at the deep science of it, it shows you that you know, fasting for a few hours or even overnight, it does result in lower insulin concentrations in the blood. And this, in turn, facilitates fat oxidation, in theory. In practice, probably doesn't make that huge of a difference. You can also, you know, burn fat by exercise itself. And I found, I'm an ectomorph, you know, naturally kind of skinny and lean. I found that I have to eat something or drink some shake before I go into the gym, or I can lift about half as much if I don't. So, you know, that's obviously self-defeating if I go into the gym fasted in any way. So that's my experience. If you're, you know, an endomorph or naturally kind of tubby, then, yeah, wake up in the morning, maybe have a cup of coffee and go for a walk, nothing that serious. And yeah, that might help you burn off some fat. But obviously, when you go into the gym later, it might be a different strategy in terms of nutrition with the pre- and post-workout shake. So again, it just depends on your goals and your body type and several issues.
Yeah, if you're going to be looking to try to put on 20 pounds of muscle, this is not something you should be trying to do. Or even when cutting, I mean, it's going right to your protein stores before it goes to your fat.
Right.
So it's really kind of a double-edged sword.
Yeah, and, you know, on the one side it might burn more fat, on the other side it's definitely more catabolic to muscle tissue as well. If you're not drinking a shake or eating something before you go into the gym, you're more likely to lose more muscle when you're working out than you would otherwise.
So basically just take a little overlook of what your goals are. I mean, if you're looking to put on some muscle, maybe you should just have something, at least some carbohydrates, maybe a cup of oatmeal, half a cup of oatmeal, and a whey shake before you hit up the gym, and you can reach those goals of putting on some muscle and also keeping your body fat down. It's just equalizing it out. And it's a tough job, but
yeah, I'm a big fan of breakfast too. Just obviously, this gets into separate issues like energy flux, but everybody should be eating breakfast, and typically, it's necessary to eat before you go out and go to the gym, even if you work out in the morning. Mm-hmm. Some people argue and complain, I can't eat and then go to the gym, it makes me sick, I throw up. Well, you actually get used to it, as long as you're not eating, you know, like a 10-egg omelet with the yolks and cheddar cheese and sausage. If you're just having a small cup of oatmeal with berries, then your body can adapt to that pretty quick.
Is that why I've been having so much gas at the gym?
The sausage.
I thought it was... Oh, maybe that was another article. Okay, that explains some things.
That's right.
I don't know. I will get into that topic, and that was kind of a joke. Don't take that too seriously.
That's not a joke. Not a joke for me. It depends on the protein shake.
Yeah, let us know how your stomach feels when you go to the gym. Drop us an email, and let us know if you're having gas and what you're eating before you go to the gym where you have that gas. Maybe we'll talk about it on the show. There's actually a story that someone sent to me when they were listening to the show, and they were in line, and we were talking about another story about children in schools and eating bad food. And they were listening to the show on their iPod just in line at the grocery store, and they saw some two heavy people buying some food for their kids, and they were buying them cookies and ice cream, and their kids were with them. And he said he kind of like, it kind of just hit him, like he's just like, I mean, this makes sense. So I thought it was kind of cool. I think his name was Swim Into on the fitness boards, and I just thought that was kind of a cool story that he sent to me, and it's nice that you guys are listening to the show and listening to it on the run. I'm glad
to get feedback. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And and as always, tell your friends if you like the show. Spread the word of the show. It's on iTunes. It's easy to get. And we've been doing pretty good on iTunes, and I thank you guys for subscribing. We're actually 19th on iTunes in the health section last week out of 1,400 shows, which is pretty amazing for only a fourth episode. And I really have to thank everyone out there for subscribing, telling your friends. And I promise that we're going to keep bringing you great content, so it's just going to get better and better in the future.
Sounds good.
But, John, we have one more story from you, and it's actually a pretty complicated story. But on the same end, it's really an interesting story, and I think our audience is going to enjoy it.
Absolutely. You know, I got the heads up to this article on Lou Schuler's blog again, so I have to give him thanks once again. Lou is always bringing us, in a very humorous manner, some of the top fitness and nutrition stories on his blog at louschuler.com. But he put up a link to a Slate.com article concerning teen pregnancy. And basically, they were looking at the decline in teen pregnancy from an alternative perspective. You know, people on the left, if you're talking about politics, people on the left and the right would love to feel responsible for statistics showing a huge decline in teen pregnancy. Between 1990 and 2000, in the U.S., teen pregnancy has plummeted by 28%. So that's a huge decline. Now, people on the left would say it's due to liberal sex education. People on the right would say that it's due to conservative abstinence. The Slate took an alternative explanation and said, wait a second, let's take a step back and see if something else might be influencing this decline. And what they said is perhaps it's because of the boys. Perhaps it's because of a worldwide trend in declining sperm count. And this opens up a whole new can of worms. This is actually something I used to talk about. And, oops. This happens every time my phone's ringing.
That's part of the show, ladies and gentlemen.
That's right. Let's see who it is. Hello, you're on FitCast. Hello, Sarah. Hey, say hi to the FitCast audience. Okay, hold on one second, Kevin. I'll be right back.
That's fine.
Okay.
So, while we're waiting for John, what should we talk about? I'm by myself with a mic, and I'm kind of nervous. Well, in this week's roundtable, we could actually be talking about more practical ways of getting more fruit and vegetable servings. So that will be coming up later in the show, so look forward to that. Also, how do you guys like the website? Do you like the new icon that's on iTunes? It's something that I put together in a couple of minutes. Kind of don't have too much computer artistic ability, but I did my best. If anyone out there wants to help create an icon for the FitCast, feel free. Drop me an email. It's kevin.larby@gmail.com, or you can always talk to me on the boards or at thefitcast.com.
We run a professional show here, that's for sure.
Absolutely. We talk over Skype. We have kind of a jerry rig of microphones and computers. Hey, it gets the job done. That's all that matters.
Absolutely. Well, what I was saying before the phone rang was this basically opens up a whole new can of worms when you talk about declining sperm counts. And it's kind of a clever explanation by Slate.com. But it can be a serious issue. And like I said, I did used to sort of address this with some of my students in some of the anthropology courses I taught. And if you look into it, it can be quite a scary topic. And it's basically scientists have put together a hypothesis showing, you know, real results, the decline in the sperm count in men worldwide, and an increase in toxic chemicals, mostly xenoestrogens, or chemicals which act as estrogens in our endocrine systems. Estrogens being the female hormone as opposed to testosterone, the male hormone. And this goes back to 1938 when two chemicals were synthesized independently, both in England and Switzerland. One was used as a sort of a pseudo estrogen. It was DES. This was the first synthetic estrogen ever made. And then the one in Switzerland was called DDT, and this was an insecticide. And people would later link these two chemicals together, showing that they both sort of attach to the human endocrine system as estrogens. Now, DDT was widely adopted in agriculture and public health programs and proved to be a very effective agent for wiping out diseases transmitted by insects like malaria. DES, this estrogen, the synthetic estrogen, was sort of considered a wonder drug and was immediately given to women experiencing problems during pregnancy and the belief that sort of insufficient estrogen levels cause miscarriages, which is not good science. It was also prescribed to all pregnancies as if it were sort of this vitamin, and it can improve people's performance during the pregnancy. And basically over 5 million women across the world received this DES treatment before it was banned and before they started realizing some of the problems it was causing. And these problems started, I could talk forever about this, I'll try to cut it shorter, but these problems started arising in the mid-20th century, like in 1947, when folks in Florida started witnessing huge declines in the birth rate of eagles, who besides a declining birth rate, the birds started showing absolutely no interest in mating. And researchers basically traced the problem to this DDE. I know we're getting a lot of abbreviations and acronyms here, but DDE is basically an estrogenic compound, a sort of byproduct of DDT, this insecticide I was talking about earlier. So they trace it to this, and it gets really scary a little later when in 1980, a chemical company in Orlando, or near Orlando, had a huge chemical spill of DDE overflowing into a nearby creek, which emptied into, forgive me for mispronouncing this lake. If anybody lives in Florida, I've read it but never said it. Let's see, Lake Apopka. But anyway, all this chemical agent spilled into the lake, and alligators to this day have suffered enormously. They started seeing sex reversals in the alligators. At least 25% of all the male alligators were found to have a deformed penis, mostly reduced in size. 25 years later, 75% of the eggs in the lake from these alligators are either dead or infertile, and the males that do survive are demasculinized, and their endocrine system is producing estrogen rather than testosterone, and most will never reproduce. So that's some scary stuff. Obviously, there's a huge chemical spill into the lake. We're not getting that kind of exposure to these chemicals every day. But if you look at the worldwide rates and declines in the sperm count and other factors which are kind of scary as well, it doesn't take much to put two and two together. Now, does that mean, what do? Are we doomed? Are we swimming in a sea of estrogen at this point? Well, not necessarily. A lot of people have debated both sides of this argument, but for sure it's good to sort of avoid plastics in some cases, like heating up your food in plastics. That's another way to expose yourself to similar chemicals. Obviously, don't drink a big glass of murky water from Lake Apopka in Florida. And just be aware of your environment around you. I wouldn't go so far to say be wary of tap water, but some people are. Some people drink distilled water instead, just because, depending on where they live, they might think that their water reserves are somewhat tainted. So it's a huge issue. Like I said, it's opening a can of worms, which we don't really have time to get into during this episode. We might bring it up in subsequent episodes. But it's sort of an eye-opener, it's something that we should all be considerate of, at least, and know of these issues and perhaps even read a little more.
Yeah, this just makes me think about, actually, a couple of weeks ago, I was at the grocery store and I saw Lake Apopka spring water. And I bought a couple of cases, and now I'm kind of thinking if I should go get my sperm count checked.
Are you finding yourself needing to watch chick flicks on TV?
I have been watching Lifetime Television for Women a lot, but it's usually I'm watching Unsolved Mysteries, which is a guy show.
I didn't realize they put it on that channel.
Oh yeah, they got reruns. So if you like cool. Unsolved Mysteries like I do, check out Lifetime Television for Women and Unsolved Mysteries. I don't know when it's on, but when it's on, I check it out. But in all seriousness, this is kind of a scary story. Like John said, it's something where I don't know if it's kind of like you're damned if you do, if you're damned if you don't. If microwaving food in plastics, I mean, so many people do it, and it kind of gets me to thinking about, oh, don't microwave your food and something because you're going to get cancer. It kind of makes me think of that subject, which kind of gets on my nerves sometimes, where you can almost get cancer from anything,
right?
And you can cure cancer with everything. Like if you have 2 oranges a week, you're not going to get breast cancer, you're not going to get prostate cancer. And I don't know, it just hit me there, and it's a subject that I'm not too informed on, so I can't go too in depth, but I'm really glad that John brought it up this week.
Right, and I agree. I don't enjoy the alarmist attitude where, you know, you have to be, make sure you don't do anything with plastics, or, you know, I still microwave in plastics occasionally. There's not much you can do about the chemicals that have already been spilled and you know, lakes across the world. But it's just a topic that, you know, is interesting on the one hand and something we should all be familiar with on the other. So let's move on to the final story. This is the final story. This is yours, Kevin. Right?
Yeah, that's it for the news this week. Let's jump into the roundtable. Actually, I guess we're just kind of doing a head-to-head, or maybe we're just sitting at opposite ends of a table. I guess we could do it that way because there's only 2 of us this week, so it's really not a round table.
Yeah, that's a square table.
Yep.
Virtual square table. Yeah, so basically what we're doing is sort of a spin-off of the article I talked about earlier, dealing with increased or decreased risk of stroke and vegetable and fruit intake. Do you want to explain a little more, Kevin?
Oh, I mean, we're just going to be talking about more practical ways of getting more fruit and vegetable servings. I know it's something that I said earlier in the show, everyone should be getting more servings of. I know everyone should be doing a little bit more. If even I get made fun of, because sometimes at breakfast, I don't know really what to put in for a vegetable. So sometimes I'll just have like 1 or 2 handfuls of romaine lettuce, like just something to get the vegetables in the morning. And it's kind of weird, but I mean,
just throw in the greens. Yeah, it's a good idea.
Yeah, or like you talk about, John, like just something like Greens Plus. Everyone should have a container of Greens Plus in their fridge where they can just throw some servings. Practically, it's a couple servings of vegetables into a shake. You can throw it into, like John, you said, your oatmeal, which I don't know if it's the best idea for everyone.
Green oatmeal. You can have it on St. Paddy's Day.
Oh, well, absolutely. Just have it with your your green beer.
Well, I realize that this isn't the most engaging topic in the world, and you know, I'll take the blame for this round table or square table today, you know, how to increase your fruit and veggie intake. But we'll try to keep it short. But it's something that you know, a lot of people actually ask on the forums, you know, how do you actually get more vegetables and fruit in your diet? And without actually sitting down and drawing up a strategy, people just won't do it. And it's something very important that we should all do, and something, you know, that can be done relatively easily. And Kevin, you brought up a good point. The Greens Plus is a powdered form of various green vegetables, which you can dump in a shake. John Berardi and I call them the super shakes. Basically, a super shake has a protein source, some fruits like berries and vegetables, the Greens Plus, as well as some good fats from nuts, for example, and you throw it all in the blender and blend it up. Now, you know, it's all up to you how good this shake can taste. And believe it or not, a shake with vegetables can taste pretty darn good. It just depends on your actual mix. I think my favorite is Biotest Grow, or Low Carb Grow. I guess it's now called Metabolic Drive. Chocolate flavored with, you know, a tablespoon of peanut butter, a scoop of Greens Plus, maybe a little bit of low-fat cottage cheese to add some protein in there. And, you know, there's a super shake. If you want to use vanilla protein and other types of nuts, you can throw in some berries as well. And that's actually a really tasty shake and something you can add to your diet on a regular basis. So my plan was just sort of to walk you through what my typical day would be, my typical day if I was eating according to my own rules, if I was dialed into my diet. You know, I'll be the first to admit that sometimes, you know, I don't always follow my own recommendations or John Berardi's own recommendations. But for breakfast, typically I'll have a bowl of oatmeal with some berries and a protein source, you know, an egg white omelet. And the berries serve as your fruit source. And then the egg white omelet, I'll throw in some sautéed onions, mushrooms, and spinach. So there's breakfast for you. Go to work, have your snack with something like carrot wedges and celery sticks, and I love to dip those into some sort of hummus. We have a recipe for hummus in our gourmet nutrition book, which you can get at gourmetnutrition.com or precisionnutrition.com. Either one of those will lead you to these. Also, you know, that's the snack during the day. Lunch. You know, let's say you worked out before your lunch, you can have your post-workout shake, and then you have, you know, a starchy carb in the form of some sort of grain, maybe rice. With that rice, you can throw in a lean protein source like chicken breasts and some sort of vegetables. When I'm at work, I typically throw together something before I go to work with frozen vegetables in it. That's just easy to do, you know. So frozen veggies, rice, chicken for lunch. Another snack could be your super shake we talked about earlier, and for dinner, you know, you can go hog wild with your vegetables and fruits. I typically have steamed spinach of some sort, and you'll notice that when you take spinach, you can take a huge pile of raw spinach and steam it down to you know, a tenth of its original size. So you can really get like 5 servings of spinach in all at once if you cook it. And again, I have this recipe for, it's an Indian recipe called Sag, and basically it's a spinach-based recipe that uses spinach in a cream sauce made from yogurt, in this case, to make it healthier. And boy, you really get a huge dose of spinach. And you'll notice that I keep harping on spinach. It's one of the most healthy vegetables out there. It's dark green color and tons of phytochemicals, which are very, very healthy for us. And before you go to bed, you know, have another shake or mix together some plain yogurt and berries and maybe have a few nuts with that, or, you know, cottage cheese and berries or some sort of protein, vanilla protein powder if you want. You know, that's about 6 meals in one day, and you get 12-plus servings of fruits and veggies.
For me, I'm all about pocket foods. If you can see what I'm saying, it's food that fits in your pocket and you can bring around. During the summer, I work on the floor at Best Buy, so I'm selling like TVs and stuff. So I like to get foods that I can bring to work and keep in my pocket, so when I'm walking around doing nothing, I can just reach into my pocket, get some food. So during the summer, I like to stick with things like broccoli. You can just get broccoli in a bag at the supermarket, already pre-cut up, throw it in a plastic bag, put it in your pocket when you go to work. You can just be chewing on some broccoli. Maybe you have it with like a handful of almonds. I mean, this is like kind of a way where you can say you have no excuse not to get in some vegetables. Same thing with things like carrots. For fruits, you can get anything that's durable. Like, you don't want to have a pocket full of watermelon, but you can have something like an apple, an orange, I mean, a pear, grapes. Anything that you can throw in your pocket and it's not going to be destroyed. You're not going to make it look like you peed in your pants or anything like that if you have to run around. And just portable foods, pocket foods. And maybe I'll have a new brand out with pocket-sized servings of fruits and vegetables that you'll be able to get on the fitcast.com. We'll see. I'll keep you posted. if it actually takes off, but I doubt it will.
You know, they're making these pre-sliced fruits and packages these days. I mean, you know, as if I think it's apples that they slice up. As if it's too hard to take an apple and stick it in your mouth, you know, and bite it off. You have to have pre-sliced apples these days. But I hear you on the pocket servings. Another option, I guess, would be to bring your own little portable cooler with you and stick some fruits and veggies in that as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many. Just be creative. I mean, you can almost throw vegetables and fruit into any kind of scenario that you have going on for yourself. I mean, if you have some kind of scenario that we haven't touched on and you really don't think that you can get those servings in, let us know and maybe we'll talk about it and we can see if we can come up with some ideas for you.
Absolutely.
Check out the boards too.
I mean, I'd love to hear some of your guys' strategies for increasing your vegetable intake during the week. So let us know.
Absolutely.
Well, I guess that wraps it up for our roundtable, unless you wanted
to
put anything else in there, Kevin.
No, I think we're good, and actually, that almost wraps it up for this week's show. But, oh, wait, I didn't forget this week. We do have a giveaway for the show, and our giveaway is pretty simple. I'm going to be posting a trivia question on thefitcast.com tonight with the show. This is May 7th, so you might be listening a couple days from now, but don't worry. All the people that get the right answer, I'm going to put your names into a hat, and I'm going to pick out a name, and you're going to get the giveaway. And the giveaway for this week is you have a choice. I just took a Fundamentals of Nutrition class in college, and they decided not to buy back the book. But it's a $150 book. It's a great book. It has tons of information. If you're looking into going in depth with nutrition, it's a nice starter book. It's a textbook, but you know, it's free. It's a $150 book that you'll be able to get for free. It's in great condition. The second option is going to be offering up a $25 gift certificate to bodybuilding.com. And again, this is something that I just had a little bit of extra cash, and I thought I wanted to give something back to you guys and give you an option for the giveaway. It's not going to be every week. And bodybuilding.com didn't hook me up with this or anything. It's just something that I thought it'd be cool if you got a $25 voucher for bodybuilding.com if you want to pick up some whey or some creatine, whatever you got to do. But I mean,
it's a great idea. Maybe you could do them consecutive weeks. This week do the nutrition book. Next week do the $25 voucher. And then 3 weeks from now, maybe we could have sort of a contest for a copy of Gourmet Nutrition ebook.
That would be great. That'd be awesome.
All right, cool.
That sounds like a plan. For this week's question, it's going to be the Fundamentals of Nutrition book, which I know a lot of you out there might be looking into doing some sort of a major in college, or if you're out of college, you're just interested in it. And next week, we're going to have a $25 voucher for bodybuilding.com. So, I mean, keep a lookout on thefitcast.com. Just submit your answer to the email address that will be on there. It's just my email address. And like I said, I'm going to pick out all the right answers, pick out your names, and I'll email you if you're the winner, and obviously I'll announce it on the show. And you'll get the book this week, and then next week it will be the bodybuilding.com gift voucher.
And then Gourmet Nutrition sometime down the road.
Absolutely. I want to get in on that. I already have a copy, but I want another one.
Sounds good.
And especially the hard copy that I'm looking forward to in the future.
Absolutely. That's coming down the line soon.
Awesome. And that will pretty much wrap it up for this week's edition of the FitCast. FitCast episode number 4. My name's Kevin Larrabee.
And this is John Williams.
And we'll see you next week. Thanks for downloading. And check out iTunes. Check out the new icon. See you.